Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just 10 bucks. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time. My name's Taylor Payne, and for God's sake, we're going to have to talk about football and Newcastle United yet again. It's nice to be back, or is it nice to be back? I'm not sure. It kind of feels like it might be okay. We'll see. George Calkins here. How are you doing, George? You all right?
I'm in London already. Oh, I'm acclimatising. I'm acclimatising for the Arsenal game. And yeah, I just think we've had too much misery. Today's the day to bring the A game.
Absolutely.
Let's attack this podcast in a front-footed manner. On that note, here's Chris Woff.
Speaking about grading and bringing our A game, Chris, what's this about you having your GCSE results framed? Is that right?
I really wish I had not said this because I thought I was... off air, I thought Go on then, George.
I want our listeners to know that Chris's idea of wall art as a 30-something-year-old man is framing his GCSE results.
None of that is factually
true. And putting
them
on his wall.
No, it's not on my wall.
I mean,
I didn't frame them, but they are here in my office to my right-hand side.
Is there some kind of shrine around them, Chris? Have your
candles
lit?
They are on display in your house, along with your cycling proficiency, your 25-meter swimming. And what I mean, what a parody of a human being you are. I mean,
incredible. Incredible. I can't even remember my GCSE results, let alone have them framed somewhere.
But ridiculous. I also subsequently did A-levels and then a degree as well, so it's weird.
Have you got them up? Have you got them up as well, Chris?
I haven't actually, no. So that's weird.
Arguably more important.
You're particularly proud of your woodwork and your home economics C. It's lovely. It's a lovely little image. I think it doesn't detract from the mental image that we all have of you. Beautiful.
I got a 25-meter swimming badge, but I didn't do lengths, I did depths. It was easier. God.
Christ.
Apart from all that, Chris, how are you? Are you all right?
Yes, I'm doing all right, thank you. I'll say I cannot complain, but I will complain a lot during the rest of this episode, so I'm not going to complain right now.
Fair play, and I will keep the complaining for later. George, are you all okay? Are you ready for this? Are you feeling...
Yeah, I told you I'm here in London. I'm already in London. I'm that excited about football.
Brilliant. Right. Okay. Headlines in 30 seconds or less, chaps. Here we go. Chris, first. Auf Wiedersehen, Ant. Is Gordon off to Germany?
Well, I think it's looking increasingly likely that Anthony Gordon will be leaving Newcastle United this summer, whether that is to Germany, whether that is to Bayern Munich, who have been strongly tipped as having interest, and certainly they have expressed one in him. That's yet to be seen. We'll have to see how it plays out, but I think that right now it's looking more and more unlikely that Anthony Gordon will be a Newcastle United player come the start of the 26-27 season.
PIF, LIV, WTF, George Colgan.
NUFC, SOS, Taylor. This refers to reports last week that PIF, Newcastle's ultimate owners, are withdrawing their financial support to LIV Golf. And indeed other sporting things that they've invested in.
Sporting things?
Yes, I'm sorry. 30 seconds or less, Chris. Give me a break. We investigated this when it happened, and we were met with a resounding, emphatic no, that this would not have any impact on their ownership or running of the club.
Fair play. How soon is now Eddie and everyone else in the mire?
Yes, so... there was meant to be this grand reset after the three-week break that Newcastle had, tack the final seven games of the season, and instead Newcastle have lost back-to-back matches. They lost to Bournemouth at St James's Park in pretty dire circumstances. 8 defeats and 11 in the Premier League, 5-6 at St James's Park. The pressure is ramping up even further on Eddie Howe than it was previously, and on the players, as we will discuss at length in this podcast.
And finally, George, the lasses at Bristol City on Sunday.
Yes, apologies for no comedy headline. Can we not try that a bit better? You know, lasses chant saloon, something like that. Lasses, woman standing, whatever.
That'll do.
The top two automatic promotion places are now out of reach. There's third place, but Newcastle are fourth in WSL2. They're 5 points behind third place Crystal Palace. And Palace play Sunderland. I don't think they're going to be doing Newcastle any favours, but then they finish off against bottom place Portsmouth. Bristol are six. Newcastle finish with a derby against Durham. So, yeah, it's kind of endgame.
Lovely stuff. Right then, chaps, let's move on and crack on with the show.
We're going to talk about some sporting things.
Let's get stuck into some sporting things. Absolutely. So subscribers to our Extra Time service will get a chance to bombard Chris and George with the tough questions later this week. A monthly Q&A is merely one of our offerings, along with special episodes like last week's deep dive into Newcastle's loan system and much else. As a bonus treat and in recognition of a very good cause, we're going to put George's recent interview with Alan Shearer about his foundation and centre and the man himself on our general feed. Enjoy that with our love, and if it tickles your fancy, please have a gander at podonthetine.supportcast.fm for more details. Okay, now it's on to the big stuff. And how about this for a big question, chaps? Are Newcastle United broken?
Yes, let's move on.
Well, that's that sorted. Thanks for listening.
See you next week,
everybody. That's the end of Pod on the Time. Right then, let's start at the very top. And as we said in the headlines, there are questions being asked about the commitment of the owners. Last week, the Saudi PIF announced they would withdraw their funding of the LIV Golf Tour. Chairman Yasir Al-Rumayyan confirmed a consolidation of their resources accelerated by the war in Iran. There were rumours that PIF, Newcastle's ultimate owner, won out. The team are 14th in the Premier League. They've lost four games in a row in all competitions. Eddie Howe is now under real pressure. The players look like they've checked out, and there's a constant swirl of speculation around the likes of Gordon, Tonali and Livramento. It doesn't feel or look very good, does it? But is there a different narrative? Are Newcastle broken or just bruised? Let's dive in. George, you spoke to the people at the top of the club to establish whether the Saudi PIF are scaling back their commitments and would that have a significant effect on Newcastle?
It's right to start with the sort of ownership, the very top of the club, that sets the tone for the kind of club Newcastle are and want to be. And of course, you know, to do that, you have to take a step back, first of all, and say that when the takeover happened 4 and a bit years ago, there was immediately talk about Newcastle winning everything, challenging for everything, being the richest club in the world, theoretically. It hasn't sort of worked out quite that way because, firstly, the rules of football don't allow people to spend whatever they want. And, of course, there have been questions about the ownership and the commitment of the ownership. But, yeah, so we checked that out and, as I said, the response was an emphatic no, that there was no there were no implications for Newcastle. It was business as usual, sorry to use that cliche, that assurances had been sought and given that Newcastle was carrying on. And there are very different circumstances which we'll come on to talk about, but it could not have been more definitive. Now, of course, those are just words. The people at the top of the club, like all the rest of us, have to make their own judgments. But in terms of the day-to-day running of the club, there's been absolutely no suggestion that this has any impact at all.
Chris, Newcastle are a very different case to LIV Golf, aren't they?
Well, that's what everyone at Newcastle believe and everyone who we speak to connected to PIFC. I mean, I will caveat everything that we are saying, first of all, by saying that getting to people actually at PIF is very difficult. So the people at the very top of PIF anyway, those decision makers, and so getting them to clarify this. Newcastle United were not mentioned by Yasir Al-Rumayyan last week when he did a press conference about what PIF's focus will be moving forward. So Newcastle weren't even mentioned within that. So you have to then unpick that and speak to people in and around it. And also the issue that you have is all of this, even on the Newcastle side, has to be taken with a pinch of salt. They believe what they're being told from above, but equally there could be intervention higher where at some stage that the interest in Newcastle gets pulled back. But Newcastle are a very different case to LIV. LIV was or is an actual challenger league. It's not just a challenger brand. It's literally been set up outside of the Golf Fund organisations that are already there, European Tour, the PGA Tour. They have thrown so much money at it. It hasn't really necessarily been seen as something which certainly in the short to medium term would make money back. In fact, they've been burning through a lot of money, throwing obscene amounts of money at golfers to get them across onto that tour. Newcastle, they couldn't do that, as George mentioned, because of financial rules and also some of the regulations which were changed post-takeover by the Premier League clubs to prevent associated party transactions, but also because that wasn't actually the way that the PIF saw Newcastle. They saw it as a long-term investment. They saw it as something they wanted to make a return on. So although there's been the best part of £800 million put into the club, if they sold it now, they'd probably get most of that back, if not all of it back already. And in time, they think it could be worth a lot more than that. So it is a very different case. Liv felt a lot more as a vanity project in some ways, or in a bid to sort of show the power that PIF and maybe Saudi Arabia could have over these leagues. I think Newcastle was more be part of the Premier League, be part of that and grow with the club. And as of yet, at least those inside Newcastle around PIF suggest that Newcastle has not realised the full potential they think that it can have, and that they would rather hold on to it and then sell it in the future when it is worth even more than it is now.
Yeah, this idea of Newcastle as an investment is not something that sort of gets reported enough. It's something that Amanda talked about from the start. You know, when obviously the whole narrative, for very understandable reasons, the whole narrative around the club was about sports washing and soft power and all that sort of thing. And it was seen like, okay, here comes Saudi Arabia. They're going to plow money in this. This is all about the glory of the Saudi regime. I'm not downplaying, you know, those concerns and or in fact, you know, the fact that the club can still be used having a presence in the Premier League, I'm sure is, you know, has soft power benefits. But it was put to us right from the start and still is now that this was an investment. This is something that Saudi want to make money on.
Yeah.
And if it's run correctly, that could happen. And I just don't think that's ever sort of quite been seen that, you know, again, when it's talking about sort of new stadium, as if the idea that PIF would sort of buy a new stadium, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's ever been on the cards. Eventually, when they sell, they want to sell because they've made money. I mean, and I think that's an important thing to say. They were never going to make money with LIV Golf, and in fact are losing, you know, £100 million or dollars a month.
But this also, George, feeds into that sort of a feeling that PIF are absentee landlords in some way, doesn't it?
Well, it totally does. I mean, we have to sort of say this, when this story broke, it sort of felt like, okay, well, here we go. This has been on the cards for a while. Again, sort of have to go back to the start post-takeover when people at the club were talking about having a training ground, new training ground online within 5 years, for example. You know, we're getting to the five-year mark. New training ground hasn't happened. Stadium, you know, that just feels like it's constantly being kicked into the long grass, despite what the club would say. And it has, yeah, they're very rarely at matches. You see Al Ramayan once or twice a season at best. And it's not being run. The club is not being run from Riyadh. It's very much being run on Tyneside by people there with the day-to-day, you know, the day-to-day appointments. They're sort of doing all that. And again, go back to the start, people, you know, high-profile figures around Newcastle were consulted by people at PIF, like, what do we do? Do we, you know, do we build hotels? Do we build posh restaurants for players and shops? Do we do all that? And none of that sort of stuff has ever sort of quite happened. So that's certainly how it feels to me. And have repeated this until I'm blue in the face, that until they've pressed the button on a big infrastructure project, it's going to feel that investment is sort of temporary or half-hearted in some way. And they felt that at all levels of the club. That's the other important thing to say, that if you're Eddie Howe and you're leading the first team and you're winning a trophy and you're trying to get better and you're getting into the Champions League, but where around you is the support network that suggests that Newcastle are becoming an elite club? Yes, the training ground has been improved, but like this isn't an elite football club in terms of its infrastructure, whether that's people, whether that's the place, whether it's the location. And so all of that stuff does have an effect, and it's been very important and it's been lacking.
They are coming to Tyneside next week, though, aren't they?
Yes, and Yasser Al-Rumayn is supposed to be part. We reported this on The Athletic last week, but this is not a... I'll caveat this early on by when we're going to come on to Eddie Howe and his situation later on. This is not in response to that. This was a planned meeting, which happens semi-regularly. There tends to be reviews or like departmental reviews every few months or so, and Yasser Al-Rumayn tends to attend them either once or twice a season. He was on Tyneside or in the Northeast. I think it was February 2025 when Newcastle had a sort of off-sighting, as you would call it, whatever you want to call it, meeting at Matfin Hall in Northumberland. They're going to be going to a similar venue this time for a similar sort of meeting. The big ticket items, which George mentioned previously, will be discussed there. I think some at Newcastle will push for further clarity on them. The training ground is close to being announced, but with the stadium, I think they'll push to try and get an actual answer. Are we going to stay or are we going to move, and can we actually make progress on this? But then a topic that will come up, obviously, is the head coach and the situation on the field. So a senior delegation is coming across. It was planned already. Not sure if they're going to be at the Brighton game, but it would make sense to go to a match in and around that time. So they may well be in attendance at St. James's Park. And so there are these, I use semi-regular, that might be stretching it too far, there are these once or twice a season events where PIF do come across in strong delegations, but equally they do tend to have representatives here more often. Jacobo Solis, who was on the board and is a PIF director, he is usually the point of contact directly from the majority ownership to the club, and it basically is daily contact that they have.
And at the same time, Chris, Newcastle are progressing off the field, aren't they, even if it may not feel like it?
Well, they certainly have made huge strides revenue-wise relative to where they were. They've basically doubled it since in the post-Mike Ashley era. Commercial revenue is up fivefold, I think it is, and they hope that that'll increase further going into next year. Champions League revenue will be there for this season. Obviously, won't be next year, or most certainly won't be next year. The executive structure is a lot more stable, or seems a lot more stable than it did heading into last summer. They have a sporting director in Ross Wilson. They have a CEO in David Hopkinson. He is bringing in appointments below him. Peter Silverstone may have left as chief commercial officer. He isn't being replaced directly, but there's going to be a chief revenue officer. They've already brought in a chief people officer, various other positions. In that regard, they have Suds, Sudarshan Gopaladesikan, as their technical director from last summer. Jack Ross is there as head of football strategy. They have all of these positions now filled or are being filled moving forward. And then the idea is obviously Vision 2030, which a lot of people will raise their eyebrows at as to how hyper-ambitious that is. But the target is very much for Newcastle by the end of this decade to be in among the very elite clubs, clearly within that conversation, hopefully on the field as well as off it, as George said. The on-pitch achievements have far outweighed where Newcastle necessarily got off the field but to this point. But still, they are a dramatically different football club off the field than under Mike Ashley. It's just that the big infrastructure in particular hasn't actually arrived yet.
So what's our verdict then, chaps, do we think on the ownership? Do we think bruised or broken? George?
I'd say bruised, yeah. As long as what they're saying is accurate, that there is still that commitment from Saudi. But, you know, I do think there are problems of communication, problems of explanation. You know, 2030, I think it's fine to have big ambitions and good, you know, to get people focusing. It feels like a long way distant from where we are now to getting there on all those sort of big things. And it feels to me like that does put pressure on the one area of the club, which until this season has been succeeding. But there's a disconnect, I think, isn't there? There's a disconnect between words and reality. And, you know, PIF have never sort of spoken publicly or, you know, rarely spoken publicly enough about what it is they actually sort of want. And I think there is a bit of an identity crisis around the whole club at the minute. So, you know, I think there are a lot of reasons to be positive, but there are kind of question marks there too. So I'd say bruised.
Certainly.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Right then, shall we move on to the head coach? Here we go. Eddie Howe, it's become a bit of a heated debate among fans, hasn't it? Has he run his race? St James's Park didn't turn on Saturday, it's important to note that, but there were boos at half-time and there were boos at full-time. There were also plenty of chance of Eddie Howe's black and white army. Chris, it's a difficult one to gauge this, isn't it? How you judge where things stand in terms of fan sentiment.
Yes, on Monday, had a rather heated debate with another journalist of this parish who has been very pro Eddie Howe and his support. I won't name him. You can probably guess who that was. But saying how difficult, both of us were saying how difficult it is to sort of gauge things. But I think I was slightly more of the view that at least more people are concerned about the direction of travel under Eddie Howe. And as much as it pains the vast majority of supporters who you speak to or you see the opinions of, because they love what Eddie Howe has brought to the club and they'd love it to continue moving forward, they struggle necessarily to see where that improvement that needs to happen is going to come from. But George made a very valid point on our post-match podcast that if the game had gone 2-0, as it looked like it was going to just before half-time, I think more of the ground, it felt like more of the ground was ready to turn. And that the boos were stronger at half-time, A, because I think more people were in the ground, but B, because Newcastle were 1-0 down, could have been 2-0 down and were struggling. There was that mini fight back in the second half. I think Bruno Guimaraes' presence on the pitch also lifted everyone. That got the biggest cheer of the day, really, when he came on. And so I think that lifted everyone. There were the chance of Eddie Howe's Black Mite Army certainly emanating from Strawberry Corner, but that wasn't necessarily universal across the ground. And you do also wonder, are people joining in because that's what they do in terms of same thing? It's very difficult to gauge how everyone feels, but all you can do is see people. Some people just talk about or just ignore what happens online, but you have to see what happens online. That there are still supporters who are giving their views online. It may be that it's an echo chamber, maybe that they are amplified in some ways, but you look at that, you speak to people who you know who are fans. And you just try and get the general discourse. You try to gauge what's happening within the ground. And I think the fan base is split. I think that more and more, though, that the concern is growing, that the body of evidence over the course of most of 2026 so far, certainly in the Premier League, is that it feels like Newcastle as a team are going downhill. And how much of that is Eddie Howe? How much of that is the players? How much of it combination? How much is it beyond what's happening off the field? All of these things impact upon one another, and it's whether you believe moving forward how can turn this around. I still think the fan base is split. I don't think it's universal either way, and I think even those people most people who want him to go already are reluctant in that they would love this to continue. But I do think that supporter sentiment is starting to turn if it hasn't turned already.
I think a couple of months ago it felt like a lot of the negativity was primarily online, and if you went to the game and you spoke to match-going fans, that it wasn't necessarily there. But I do think that's changed in recent weeks. I have felt that change the couple of times I've been up recently. It does feel like something's different in the crowd, and it's almost like they're waiting for the worst to happen, if that makes sense. They're kind of waiting for Newcastle to concede a goal or to lose a game. It's difficult though, isn't it, George? What do we know about the man himself and how he's feeling about life and the universe and everything at the moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, Chris and I have written a number of pieces about Eddie Howe and his position and sort of what's going on. You know, I think like everybody after Sunderland, he was in reflective mood. He's very conscious of the fact that he probably stayed a season too long at Bournemouth. You know, he's spoken about that. He's sort of told stories about how he could almost feel a reluctance going to work in the morning. That was the first sort of inkling that he had that things were possibly sort of coming to an end. He sort of felt that and went to Bournemouth and said, look, I think I should probably go. They persuaded him to stay, you know, stay for another year, and then they got relegated. So he doesn't want the same thing to happen. He's a very reflective man. He's a very sort of not unemotional. He is emotional, but he tries to sort of step back from the emotion. He does that on match day. We see him doing it, trying not to be affected by what's going on. And he's tried to do the same thing, you know, with the mood music around at the minute. And he's actually, you know, his response to Sunderland was to sort of to feel that, feel more determined, if anything, more resilient. He is letting it be known that he's absolutely involved in everything that the club are looking to do this summer, from planning pre-season to buying and selling players. That is the message coming from his camp, you know, and also that he kind of feels like he's in a decent place with his players. The problem, of course, is that the evidence doesn't give him any backing for that, because performances, both Crystal Palace and Bournemouth, were poor. So he is saying he's determined, he wants to carry on, but he's a reflective man. He's not stupid. He knows that if he loses the support of players, it's game over. If he loses the support of fans, it's game over. And it feels to me that, you know, a tipping point isn't far away on both those things if it carries on like it is.
Having the support of supporters is important for any manager or head coach, but particularly for Howe. I mean, you had periods under, certainly under Alan Pardew, even under Steve Bruce, where you could argue that large parts of the fan base had maybe turned against them, but they managed to sort of muddle through that, partly because it didn't matter, because Mike Ashley wasn't going to listen to that, but also that it wasn't that they necessarily fed off the crowd as much as certainly Howe has done. And I mean, Howe himself has said regularly at Bournemouth that he puts down partly relegation down to the fact that there was the COVID period and that they couldn't have fans in there, and that really did actually affect them late on. But at Newcastle, he's also built all of this from unity throughout the football club. That's part of his idea, and it's everyone moving in the same direction together. And that's where I think if as seems to be the direction of travel at the moment, with supporters increasingly doubtful of what Eddie Howe can bring, and maybe some starting to verbalise inside the ground how they feel about that, I struggle to envisage how that goes on longer term, because it is so much part of what makes him a successful head coach and why his teams have been successful. And it's almost uncharted territory for him to have to move through that when he's almost battling against the crowd. That's not how he's managed so far. It's not how he seems to want to manage moving forward. And so that's why I think it's so crucial that he has the fans, or at least a significant portion of the fans, backing him and the team.
The view from on high, though, Chris, has always been that, all things being equal, Eddie will be in charge next season, hasn't it? But are all things still equal?
Yeah, the starting point, as George and I have said many times on this podcast, as we've written in The Athletic, we've done pieces over the last few months, regularly saying the same thing, and fundamentally that position hasn't necessarily shifted. That ideally the starting point for next season, that Eddie Howe will be head coach and will lead them into that season. But as we've said, there's a great distance to get to that starting point. And it feels like it's actually, despite the number of matches having lessened since then, it actually feels the starting point's become further away, given how Newcastle have actually performed in the last two. And so, no, things aren't equal. And it would be alarming, actually, if everyone was sat inside the club and just saying everything's fine,
yeah,
watching what's going on the field. There has to be that headstrong analysis of what is going on now. And it may be that they come out with the conclusion that it's not actually Howe that is the problem, or that he can turn things around and he is strong enough to do that. But that there needs to be critical analysis of him, his position, and what he is bringing to this set of players, and what happens moving forward. And that is happening. And so, yeah, are things still equal? No. Is that still the default position? Ideally, yes. But as we've said so many times, you've got to get to that point. And at the end of the season, the plan has always been that things will be reviewed to a certain extent on all sides, and that still remains the position.
George, what is there in the plus column for Eddie Howe? What positives can we take?
Well, so that phrase that often gets trotted out is credit in the bank, but you can switch that around and say, well, it's his body of work in 4.5 extraordinary years on Tyneside, from you know, saving the club from relegation, twice getting into the Champions League, finally winning a trophy, to the early work in the transfer market, a time when there was simply no infrastructure in the club, with a sporting director or, you know, or a chief executive, anything like that. So if you're, and, you know, changing the whole identity of the football team, he's a club builder. This has been a project for him. What he's saying is that he's as committed as ever and wants to sort of carry on. And so you can look at that sort of dispassionately and say, yeah, he deserves the chance to get through a tough season and go again. But then, of course, you also have to balance it with the minus. And then the minus this season is that it's been really poor in the Premier League. They're 14th. They're losing games now. It doesn't feel like players are listening. The team looks tired. It looks like it doesn't have ideas. What was a pretty catastrophic summer window, both with Isak leaving, but then what they did afterwards, which has Eddie Howe's fingerprints on it, because it has to have done. And so again, you're then trying to sort of make a judgment on where that sort of leaves everybody. And I do, to go back to what Chris said, I think these weeks are very important. It is going to be another big summer. It's going to be very difficult. Everybody knows it's going to be difficult. There is also an opportunity. I say difficult because, players are going to leave, almost certainly. There's a lot of work that needs to be done around the squad, particularly after they didn't strengthen for so long. And everybody has to be fully committed to that. You want, the ownership directors have to be fully committed to Howe. Howe has to be fully committed to the way the club is operating and the targets they're aiming for. You want to see signs that the players who will stay are still committed to the team, committed to the manager, and that he's getting through to them. And of course, you want that relationship that Chris talked about between team, staff, supporters to still be there, because that's been the bedrock of everything at the club. And I think as soon as one of those things break, or there's a little chink of light between any of those areas, then it's real problems. And so I do think these next few weeks are a big moment that people will be looking to see that there's something to build on for the future.
So what's our verdict on the head coach then, Chris? Bruised or broken? I think this one's not as clear cut, is it? And I think it depends who you ask as well.
Yes, I think it very much depends who you're asked. I think very bruised, and it's basically the answer will come in the next five games as to how broken or otherwise. We need to see something. I think that is fundamentally the case. If Newcastle were to just lose the next five games, I struggle to see how Eddie Howe could start next season as head coach, because that would be a ridiculous run of negative results. There certainly needs to be an uptick in performances as well. And I also think that there needs to be some sort of identity shown out on the pitch. That's the problem at the moment. When Howe's sides have performed well, they've had that identity, which has created that symbiotic relationship with supporters that they've bought into. And I think part of the issue at the moment is that even those supporters who back Howe look at it and think, well, what is it we're actually trying to do? What is it this team, how is this team going to succeed? And certainly in attack, we haven't seen enough of that. So there needs to be greater evidence over the course of the next few weeks. But yeah, very, very bruised is what I'd say right now.
Okay, no worries. Let's move on then, chaps, onto the team itself. With the discussion centering on the manager, some might say the players have been getting off lightly when it comes to scrutiny. In our match day pod after the Bournemouth game, we heard from Kieran Trippier. Let's have a quick reminder of what he said.
Like I said before, it's us players who need to take responsibility. The manager's given us clear instructions individually and as a team what to do. So I'm not going to stand here and accuse the manager. It's nothing to do with him. He's given us clear instructions, so it's us players who need to step up and execute his plan.
Chris, quite strong words there from Kieran Trippier. Are they doing that? And if not, why not?
It's always difficult to give. I'm going to turn in Eddie Howe here. I should pause for 7 seconds as he did after the game on Saturday and say I'm hesitating because I don't want to speak on behalf of others. And it is very difficult. And I also don't like to necessarily, it's like when we talk about fans, I suppose, as we were earlier, I don't like to homogenise everyone. I don't like to homogenise everyone within the dressing room. All players have different attitudes, different sort of leadership roles within the squad. They have different views on the manager, I'm sure. They have different views on how the team is playing, what they should be doing on their own situation and how they see the club progressing or otherwise. And that is, I think, part of the issue. And when you can bring it all back to Alexander Isak and the reasons why he wanted to leave. Now, fundamentally, yes, he was going to get paid a lot more money and go to a club in Liverpool who were the defending champions and could be competing for silverware. But also, a lot of people in and around Isak and have said this about other players as well, is that when George mentioned earlier those sort of big ticket items and what Newcastle were and are supposed to be, that hasn't been delivered upon. And so they're looking at it, and we have relatively short careers as of yet. Newcastle haven't even announced what's going to happen with the stadium or the training ground. Even if I stay here for 3 years, certainly the stadium's not going to be sorted if Newcastle were to move stadium. Even the training ground would only just be probably getting constructed or finishing construction by that stage. So if you look at the last couple of matches, it's difficult to say that players have been taking responsibility, in that certainly in the first half, we mentioned on the matchday pod that it's the youngest Newcastle side in the Premier League match in 21 years. You could almost see that. It felt like everyone else was waiting for somebody else to take control. Everyone else was waiting for somebody else to grab a hold of it. But that's also confidence affected. So rather than digging in too much into to sort of players' personal circumstances and how they may feel or otherwise, in any walk of life, if you have that confidence hit, then it can come across and body language can look difficult. But I do think there are at least some players within the squad who are thinking about their own futures, whether that's they're thinking about the World Cup and they want to make sure that they are available for that, don't get injured between now and then, whether it's that they are thinking about their next move away from Newcastle, leaving to go elsewhere. There are certain players in that regard and certain players who far too regularly this season have not hit the heights that they should have done. Certainly in the games, I think that they've raised themselves on certain occasions, but on those matches that we mentioned that Newcastle have fallen short in, Crystal Palace away, Brentford at home, matches like that, these players haven't stood up in the way that we know that they are capable of doing. And so I think it's hard to argue that they have fully taken responsibility, but that's not trying to just dig out individuals necessarily.
A lot of the times as well, when I've watched us this season, it feels like it's bare minimum basic stuff that's not happening as well. So I've seen players pulling out of tackles. I've seen players not tracking men. I've seen players, you know, blindly passing balls inside without giving it a second's thought and then not tracking back after they've lost it. And little things like that in the past, Eddie Howe hasn't allowed Newcastle to do that. He's drummed it into us. The attitude has to be right. We have to be on it from the start and all the way through the game, the intensity, but it's just not there, is it? And a year ago, George, Newcastle United had just won a trophy. They were surging back towards the Champions League. What the fuck has happened to that team since then?
Yeah, I mean, so we have to remember that that did happen in very, very recent history, certainly relative to the amount of time that had passed without Newcastle winning something. So
remember, George, when you used to start podcasts by talking about Newcastle being winners now? That feels like a long time.
Yeah, but is that part of what is... I mean, I've made that joke. I mean, I've made the joke is actually being good is actually quite difficult.
Yeah.
So I think the really damaging thing over the past few weeks is that it's looked like a character deficit, a deficit in character. You talked about that there, Taylor, you know, people pulling out of tackles or not running hard enough. I mean, I do think that that confidence thing affects that. Now, you know, a little story about that, which we've told before. Anthony Gordon starts the season through the middle because Isak's not playing. He does pretty well in that central role. He then gets sent off against Liverpool. There was a feeling internally that that really affected him, that, you know, he was suddenly no longer quite as certain about when to make his runs, how, you know, about, you know, so stuff that sort of comes automatically when you're playing well, playing on the edge like that. Suddenly you have a bit of doubt in your mind. It looks like you're not trying as hard. You know, I think there's been a bit of that. I also think the way Eddie Howe teams play are aggressive, are front-footed. If you have two or three players who may be suffering from that lack of confidence or aren't quite at it or aren't fully fit or whatever, that the whole system almost falls apart. And so it can look tired. It can look like it doesn't work. I think there's been a bit of that happening. And you know, what the fuck has happened to this team? Well, they lost their biggest asset. They lost their get out in terms of goal scoring. You know, it feels like ancient history now, but we've been saying from day one this season it was going to end up being transitional, and a lot of it, you know, a lot of what happened would, you know, sort of depend on your tolerance to see a team labouring a bit, and so it's been. But it does also feel like this is a team in decline at this point, that it hasn't been augmented enough, it hasn't been strengthened enough, and there's this feeling that they're sort of gripping on for all they're worth, stretched by all these games that they've had to play. And, you know, I think Isak was damaging, not just because of losing him, but of the message it sent. I think we've got too many players now who are probably looking elsewhere or thinking that their ambitions can't be fulfilled at Newcastle. This then does play into the stuff we were talking about earlier in terms of the ownership and, you know, whether the club is, you know, progressing quickly enough. So I think we've all, you know, a point that Ollie has made in our running order, we've talked about this too, like identity. What does Newcastle stand for now? All of my lifetime, Newcastle have been straining to win something, or that's been the big idea. I've been like yearning, this great yearning, the impossible mission, you know, the magnificent obsession, as it was called. And having done that, you know, go into this season and it feels like nobody can really be asked for the Premier League. So we're not going to win the Premier League. So they've done pretty well in the Cups, done well in the Champions League, actually a bit of an achievement, yeah, kind of, in the Champions League. But really, what does getting to the last 16 of the Champions League really mean? That's all a bit, you know, existential, I suppose, and esoteric. But I've definitely felt that in my soul. I know that Newcastle are kind of quite good, so I expect them to be quite good. But what is the big idea? What is the big idea now? And yeah, I think it's a club that's wrestling with itself.
Yeah, and widen that out beyond the players. I know it's focused on the players here, and we haven't had a specific category on this because I don't think it's fair for us too. But and I realise people are going to probably be throwing things at the whatever device they're listening to this on. But fans maybe need to come in that as well, and it's that sort of existential question of what is this now? What are we trying to achieve? Where are we going forward? And I think that has fed into St. James's Park this season. Certain people within the club have said at certain points it hasn't felt like it the St. James's Park of maybe the last couple of seasons. I think partly that's been game fatigue and the number of matches, partly and largely that's been because the team hasn't necessarily been offering so much on the pitch. But I also think it's unclear what Newcastle are or what they're trying to do. And so when the fans are so important to what has been achieved at the club, I think that is at least a point we need to raise within this as well and bring sort of the wider fan base into that as well.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Chris, what, if anything, are the clubs saying about the likes of Gordon and Tenali and Livramento and what might happen to them in the summer?
Well, they're being quite clear that some players will leave and some big players will highly likely leave. I think at this point, on all sides, the realisation is that Anthony Gordon probably needs to go, and everyone is sort of comfortable with that, I think, on all sides, if the price is right and if Newcastle think they can sign a replacement. Partly that's to finance the rebuild that needs to happen throughout the rest of the squad, so sell players and then use the funds from that to be able to rebuild, but also just a freshening of certain areas, and maybe those players who think that their future lies elsewhere rather than have any sack situation, a damaging one which lingers on throughout the entire summer and filters into everything that Newcastle tried to do and really into this season and has roots in all of what's been the problem this season, is to make sure that actually those players who maybe want to go that they are given the opportunity to do early on if the opportunity is there to present itself. Gordon has not yet communicated to Newcastle that he wants to go, but I think at least some people within the club feel that he would be receptive or potentially keen to go and if that was the situation. Sandro Tonali, again, I'm sure there would be interest there from him in going to one of Europe's biggest clubs. I am not being as convinced as even people inside Newcastle have been that there's going to be significant interest in him for the price that it would cost as a full deal. There is interest in him, but it's going to be a very expensive deal to do. Newcastle hold all the cards there, length of contract and the like. Tino Livramento, there has been interest. There aren't that many top-class right-backs out there or full-backs out there. You can argue that his performances recently haven't been that of a top-class full-back. He's also had a lot of injury problems, which I think have made some of his suitors doubt a little bit more his situation. He hasn't yet signed another contract. He's going in the final 2 years of it. Something needs to give there. Either he needs to get around the table and sign that, or Newcastle probably do need to try and move him on to get a reasonable value. So that's a long way of saying, yes, I do expect some of these big players to leave. Newcastle have been quite open about that. They want to almost quote-unquote normalise the idea that Newcastle will trade outwards, including some of their best players at certain points. That's what they have to do in a PSR and now SCR world moving forward. I think it's highly, highly unlikely that all three of those players will still be in Newcastle's squad come the start of next season.
So what's our verdict, George, for the team, bruised or broken?
It's broken.
Yeah.
It's broken. And I say that with great reluctance because this is the team, or most of it, that gave us the best day of our lives, certainly in football supporting terms. But if you look at where they are on the table, that's falling behind their own very high standards. And, you know, Isak's gone. We know that Trippier's going. We think that Fabian Scher will probably go. Chris has talked there about the big players who may be leaving. And so I think that's it's just the end for this, this version of Newcastle United. And so, again, I'm also not casting blame at individuals. I think it's very, you know, a team is a collective, isn't it? And so it becomes one unit. And that's been the great sort of strength that, God, look at Dan Byrne playing in the same team, you know, with his story, playing in the same team. Greater than the sum of the parts. Yeah. And you've got Blythe represented and you've got Brazil represented. You've got, you know, and it doesn't feel like it's a team at the moment, does it? It feels like you're just kind of looking around the pitch, not entirely sure what they're doing. Again, at their absolute best, everybody in the dressing room would be able to sit there thinking, I know exactly what my role is, and the lad sitting next to me, I know exactly what he's doing. I trust him with my life. And at the moment, well, that's just not there. So it's going to be a massive summer. There's going to be some painful farewells. And, you know, when I say broken, I don't say that with kind of anger, because as I say, a lot of these players are and will be rightly known as legends. It's just time for it to change.
Yeah, as much as it hurts and as much as it pains me, I would have to agree with you on that as well. Maybe, though, we need to book a therapist in to answer this question properly, but is there a part of us that wants to be shit again? This comes from Discord after the Bournemouth matchday pod from Michael Smith. Just catching the start of the pod here. How good is it now we are shit again? It's much more what we are used to, like a shitty old chair in the corner, dog-eared, battered and ugly, but really comfy.
Yeah.
How do we
find? You would say, what would you say? Sort of like an old pullover that you can pull on, and it's just like
an old tatty jumper. Absolutely. I mean, Michael, and he's by no means alone here, is he? Should be careful what he wishes for. We're going to preview Arsenal away after this short break. So.
Yeah, so I don't think Michael is being fully serious. I mean, it's certainly recognisable. I mean, I've found myself having conversations with people, you know, attached to the club over the past sort of couple of weeks, you know. People who've been there for a very, very long time saying, oh, I've seen this film before, I've seen this movie before, we know what happens next. And it's like saying that with a degree of glee. I mean, we all, you know, whinging is part of the football life, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just didn't think we'd be here quite as soon as we are post Wembley last season, because it did feel like that there was an opportunity for the club. It felt like there was a chance for there to be a bit of a springboard. And of course it just ended up being so, so disastrous. But we all like a good moan.
We do. It feels like a natural position, doesn't it? Right then. Newcastle United are playing Arsenal this weekend. That's fun. Here's a multiple choice question, and it's a rhetorical question, really. Which of the following would best represent the notion of typical Newcastle? A, go to the Emirates and win, or B, go to the Emirates and lose heavily. On the face of it, this is a daunting prospect for Eddie Howe and co, isn't it, Chris?
Yes, I mean, I mentioned at the top of the show, Newcastle have lost 8 of the last 11 Premier League matches, 5 of the last 6 in the league at St James's Park. Since the start of the run on January 25th, no side has lost more matches in that time.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And Newcastle also have an awful record at Arsenal in the league. The last 13 Premier League away games, they've drawn 1 and lost 12. Scored just 1 in the last visit to the Emirates. They did win at the Emirates in the League Cup. Obviously, the League Cup semi-final, that's first right, leg in January 2025.
Oh, how I yearn for those days.
Well, exactly. Arguably the best performance, or one of the best performances, probably alongside the Carabao Cup final itself, of the entire Eddie Howe era, the way that Newcastle went there and dominated and controlled that match over both legs, really. So all of that is alarming. Newcastle's inability to keep clean sheets, their general form and the way that they're playing, they just lack structure and attack. They're not creating chances, really. They have very few opportunities. So all of that adds up to be fairly negative in that regard, and how at the Emirates in the Premier League hasn't gone particularly well, as we mentioned there. But then, if I flip it slightly, Arsenal themselves are going through a very jittery period. They've lost 4 successive domestic matches including their last two Premier League games, which is the first time since December 2023 they've lost straight back-to-back Premier League games. So Arsenal are facing the jitters. I think in many ways they'll be delighted that it's Newcastle United coming to town, because if there's one side you want to see right now, if you're Arsenal, it would be Newcastle, given their record in the league at the Emirates and given their record generally in the Premier League right now. But Newcastle have to make sure that they try to capitalise on the fact that it will be a very, very nervous stadium in North London for that game.
Yeah, it's not all bad news, is it, George? It's not entirely bad.
No, it is.
It is, okay.
Yeah, right. It is.
I should have known not to come to you for the positive spin on things, but fair enough.
No. I mean, Chris is right. There will be that narrative that sort of all the pressure will be on Arsenal because of where they are on the table, but that's not true, not from a Newcastle perspective. From a Newcastle perspective, it's important. I don't think many fans will be going there in the current circumstances expecting Newcastle to win, but I think people are right to expect to see signs of life. I mean, I think that is, that does feel important. And I'm sure that Eddie Howe will feel pressurised around this game. It's an important game for Newcastle. There has also been a bit of a, that theory that Newcastle rouse themselves for these big moments. I'm not sure how much that stands up to scrutiny. We'll talk about that in a bit. If we are clutching at positives, yeah, as Chris said, Arsenal have lost four of the last six games. That's more than they've done in 50 plus games before that. And we're also, there's no Bukayo Saka. Without him in the team, their win percentage drops very, very heavily from something like 73% to 45%. And so Newcastle have to go there thinking that they've got an opportunity to Newcastle. And Newcastle fans would love nothing more than to pile on some misery for Arsenal, because they, of the collective head loss that always seems to happen when they lose matches, particularly to Newcastle at St James's, we've seen that before. So they have to go there with that attitude. They have to go there with a much better attitude that they've shown in recent matches.
Chris, Joe Linton's serving the second and final game of his suspension as well, isn't he? But do we expect to see any players back? Could Bruno potentially start?
Well, I think if Newcastle can get Bruno into the starting 11, they would love to. He looked like a player massively short of minutes in the, because he has been when he came on against, as much as he offered that positive influence and had a role in Newcastle's equaliser, he didn't look like he could cover ground. Certainly for Bournemouth's winner, it didn't look like he could get back as other players couldn't. Didn't he look like he physically maybe couldn't? But if Newcastle can get him in the start 11, I think that would be huge, because he just is the driving force. He's the captain, but also just the way that he plays, he provides that creative spark. Anthony Gordon, the early soundings are that it's going to be touch and go for Arsenal. In some ways, optics-wise, that might actually be a bit better for him rather than the idea that he only missed out the weekend due to speculation around him. Newcastle pushed back strongly on that and said that the hip injury is genuine. If he misses next weekend, then I think that'll be clear as well, that the hip injury is preventing him. Tino Livramento looks like is going to have a spell on the sidelines. Whether he even plays a game this season for Newcastle remains to be seen. And so it'll be interesting in that regard, because it was... Obviously, Lewis Hall was hooked at the weekend, but you would expect Lewis Hall to continue a left-back, A, because of the lack of alternatives, and B, because generally he has been one of Newcastle's best players across the course of this season. So does that mean Trippier comes in right-back? Does Lewis Miley shift to right-back if Bruno Guimaraes comes into midfield? They're the ones that you'd look at and think maybe they can make those changes. But not having Joe Linton's physicality at Arsenal, I think, will prove to be a bit of an issue for Newcastle, even if he hasn't been in great form himself recently.
George, you alluded to that narrative about Newcastle rousing themselves for the biggest matches. Is that entirely accurate? Obviously, they've beaten Man City this season, Chelsea, Man United in the Premier League, decent against Liverpool, the PSG draw, the Champions League against Barcelona, they were all right. Is that accurate, that they roused themselves for the big games?
Well, I wrote all those names down because I was going to read them out. Now that you've done it, I've got nothing else to say. Ask Chris, he might have an opinion. I was just going to read those names out.
All right, okay, fair enough.
I think there's an argument to be made for that, but I also think there have been occasions where Newcastle haven't been able to get up for those big matches. And ultimately, I mean, against Barcelona, ultimately, they did lose that. Ultimately, they did lose against Liverpool. Man United, Chelsea, not quite sure they're exactly the same level of the others, even if Man United look like they're heading back into the Champions League. Man City, yes, they won in November, did very well, but that feels like a long time ago. Really, at the course of the last 3 months, on those big occasions, Newcastle have fallen short. They were turned over at the Etihad. They were turned over at home in the FA Cup against Man City as well. So I think there's a certain amount of evidence to support that, but I think that actually fundamentally probably falls down certainly over the course of the last 3 months. I think that maybe in November you could argue that now. I think it's hard to say that. Chelsea are an absolute bin fire themselves at the minute, and Liam Rossini is under a lot of pressure. So with every passing week that looks like less impressive a victory, but it still was a victory nonetheless. So
yeah, and to be serious for a second, it did feel like that Newcastle was sort of turning up in the Champions League, that those different occasions under the lights, you know, midweek, sort of brought something out of Newcastle. I think we have to sort of, you know, consider and remember that the opposition wasn't necessarily A-list.
Yeah.
But certainly it seemed to sort of bring something out, because it was that different. It is still a sort of new and different experience for the club and the team, and they seem to sort of relish that in the same way that they haven't relished the Premier League. If we're talking about big games, you know, it's a sort of slightly different case in point, but the two biggest games of the season have been Sunderland, home and away, and Newcastle haven't turned up at all for those games. I mean, if you're talking about occasion, if you're talking about atmosphere, if you're talking about local meaning, Newcastle just haven't turned up at all. And the problem at the moment is that they're not turning up full stop.
And we mentioned the Champions League before, Chris. Is Europe gone now? Should Newcastle be looking down rather than up?
I mean, it isn't gone, because mathematically Newcastle could get there. I think nobody logically looks at it, certainly when you mired in this sort of Newcastle-focused environment, to think that Newcastle are going to finish in the European position. But it could theoretically happen. They could go to Arsenal, win, and then they could bounce back against Brighton, and suddenly you look at the last three games, and they've found a bit of momentum from somewhere, and they could get back into that picture. But you can't have that as a goal now. I think from now you just got to try and focus generally that cliche of match upon match. Should Newcastle be looking down rather than up? Yes, in the sense that Leeds could easily overhaul them. Those other clubs behind them could bring them back. I made this point on the Matchday podcast. It's fortunate really that Newcastle have got themselves to 42 points already, because if you'd rewound if you take away two of those victories, or even one of those victories, suddenly you'd be thinking, wow, Newcastle actually could get dragged into the relegation picture. I don't think that that's going to happen. It was funny, it was like, we were at St James's Park that Saturday, and Spurs took the lead against Brighton, and suddenly people are going, oh, you know, Spurs could catch them. And it's like, you get caught in that mindset. It's like, Spurs actually haven't won a single match in the Premier League since December 28th. And in the end, they didn't win. But it's like, you get so focused on your own club and in the environment, how difficult it is. But actually, there's a lot of clubs going through a lot of difficult situations. I mentioned Chelsea before. Now, Chelsea have more points on the board. They are still in and around the European picture. But it's still, I think you can become a little bit too Newcastle narrow-minded and narrow-focused. But yeah, I think they have to be looking over the shoulder and wondering how low could we actually finish, rather than you could actually say with any sort of confidence they're going to get themselves back in the European picture, because it's just nothing of recent form or the way that team's playing or the results tells you that they're going to get back into that picture.
George, did you want to say something?
Well, I want to just point out that I did some maths. I've done some stats.
Okay, so there's a chance they're not going to be right then in that case.
Oh, no, there's every chance that they're completely wrong, yeah. There's a 100% chance of them being completely wrong, but there's only a 10% chance of that.
Of course.
So after Arsenal, it's Brighton, Forest, West Ham, Fulham. Now, of course, you know, you read those names out and the default position, oh, yeah, that's not a bad run-in, except Newcastle aren't winning any games at the minute. And
I mean, yeah.
They're not. They're spectacularly bad. They're spectacularly bad at not beating teams sort of around them, or the quote-unquote that they should beat. So, like, what's a realistic point? I mean, let's be really optimistic and say five games, how many points can Newcastle get? 12?
Well, I mean, they've got 11 points from the last... sorry, they've got 8 points from the last 11 game. No, I'm going to start again. They've got 9 points from the last 11 games in the Premier League. So that's...
Absolutely. So I'm saying wildly optimistic. So let's take, you know, put on rose-tinted glasses. Let's say they go to Arsenal, probably lose because Arsenal are going for the championship, but they put in a really committed performance and they take in a bit of momentum, and then they win the last 4 games of the season. All right?
So that would give them 12 points. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
No, but listen to me. Okay. The point I'm trying to make, the question was about Europe. For God's sake. Like, if they got 12 points from this position, that would take them on to 54 points, correct?
Yep.
Thank you. Last season, 54 points would have got Newcastle to 11th. The season before, it would have got them to 9th. In 22-23, 54 points would have got them to 10th. In 21-22, bit of an outrider, it would have got them to 8th. And in 2020-21, it would have got them to 12th, which I think is actually where they did finish in 2021. So in other words, what I'm saying is that even if Newcastle, from this very, very unlikely scenario, finish the season very strongly, they're going to finish somewhere between 8th and 12th.
Yes, I mean, the only caveat make to that is that, because you can even see that from the year on year, I think this season it's tighter. So theoretically, you could finish slightly
really
higher.
Tight, isn't it?
But I think your point's right. Maybe they could just scrape into 7th or something, but I think your point's right that the likelihood is probably going to be between 8th and 12th. But yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much. Next week, I'll be doing my times tables. can't wait to get my results posted on the wall.
Put them on the wall, yeah. If we are trying to be positive, the heavens do appear to be aligning for the perfect Premier League scenario of Aston Villa finishing 5th and winning the Europa League. That would mean an extra Champions League place and knock-on effects to the European places below, of course. Newcastle just have to make sure they're not left staring blankly into that particular gift horse's mouth. Right then, chaps, I think that's just about it. Don't forget that podnatine.supportandcast.fm is the place to go if you want to subscribe to Extra Tyne and have a listen. Extra Tyne signups also get access to the back catalogue, including 4th anniversary documentaries on Eddie Howe and the takeover, the Academy, Newcastle's loan system, the transformative year that was 2025, plus a visit to the Alan Shearer Centre, which everyone can listen to later this week. Extra Tyne crew as well, make sure you remember there's a Q&A coming on Friday. Get your questions in for that. Get in touch. The email is podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky at Pod on the Tyne. Anything else before we finish off, chaps?
Want to give a shout to Chris, who's now entering his final week nearly of running 5K every single day.
Wonderful
for
stuff.
Tiny Lives Charity. How are you doing with that, Chris?
The legs are tired, but we've just got to focus on the end now. We've just got to get through these last 8 days. So yeah, I've done 22.
How's your massive thighs, Chris? Are they keeping you in good stead?
They're throbbing.
Jesus. It's not a word I needed to hear today, to be honest.
Chris, bruised or broken?
Nearly broken.
Okay, good.
Fair play. Right then, get in touch with us. The email is podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky at podonthetyne. Thank you very much for your time, chaps. Thanks, Chris.
You're very welcome. Let's return next midweek to do exactly the same again and just cover just ask the question again. Are Newcastle even more broken than
they were this week? Yeah. Thanks for your time, George.
C+ for this podcast, I think.
C+. That's generous.
Good Lord. Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you to all of you out there for listening as well. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, we hope you have a good week. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Goodbye.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.